2 days. One of the days, Tuesday night, the city council and the community fought back and turned back the sitting ban being proposed by the conservative mayor in Berkeley, Shirley Dean. She thought she had a majority of 5. She thought she'd scared one of the liberals into joining her, a woman named Harriet Blue. Anyway, we got that vote back, and the sitting ban is history. It was turned back. We have an incoming phone call.
Hi, you're on the Radio Santa Cruz.
That was Council Member Margaret Freeland.
I'm Margaret, not Harriet. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Appreciate that.
It's my erstwhile co-producer there, Becky Johnson, coming in with some information. She, of course, was up there, as I was saying, with me in Berkeley. And we got lots of interesting footage on the Berkeley City Council meeting. It was kind of a mixed bag at the council meeting. We fought back the sitting ban. We successfully will have on the agenda the infamous Operation Av Watch, as it's called, the harassment combo action against people on Telegraph, including police, mental health workers, animal control people to take their dogs, a cleaning machine, the police substation, Orca. They had all the guns out there on Avenue on the police, again, in this police sweep situation on Operation Avenue Watch for the last month. It started June 15th, and it cost $72,000, I believe, or $79,000. Huge amount of money for police overtime, with the result that they wrote, I think, 4 jaywalking tickets, 1 vandalism ticket, massive amounts of harassment, but no crime, essentially. Very little crime found. And I'm going to read some information from Berkeley. Kind of, there's been a lot of stuff in the papers up there around the issue to give you some of the flavor of the debate around it, both pro and con, though frankly, the arguments in favor of cracking down on poor and homeless people are so spurious and so laden with false information that it really is sort of a disservice to read them. But in the interest of, quote, fairness, I'm going to read them and I'm going to comment on them as well. In any case, we also had, and we're going to talk about that later, we also had an occasion to run into an incident at Shattuck and University Avenue, which is a sort of downtown Berkeley. It was about 9 or 10 last night. We were coming back from dinner, and I noticed a security guard, or kind of looked like a security guard. I don't think he had a gun. He was a manager at McDonald's at that corner. If those of you who are familiar with Berkeley know it, it's downtown at Shattuck and University, arguing with this rather raggedly dressed man who was standing on the sidewalk. Actually, was standing on the ramp of McDonald's right outside the door, and he was drinking some kind of milkshake that he purchased inside, as he described it later, and as indeed this seemed to be the case. I didn't smell it, but there was never any question that he had purchased something at McDonald's and was trying to drink it. He was about to light up a cigarette outside, and he was being hassled by the McDonald's manager. The McDonald's manager was demanding he move away from the door. Not as you might expect, because of some kind of claim about smoking, which I believe there may be some ordinance in Berkeley that covers that, as there now is in Santa Cruz, about smoking near buildings, the wisdom of which I'm not going to comment on at this time. It seems to be another stupid extension of police power and an unnecessary extension, which leads to the kinds of incidents that Mike Rotkin here in Santa Cruz, for instance, has assured us it will not lead to, namely harassment of poor people on the streets. And it has nothing to do with a code of civility. Rather, it's a code of repression we're talking about. But this didn't have to do with that particular law. This had to do with the manager simply telling this guy to go away from the door. He wouldn't tell him why. And the guy pointed out to the manager that he wasn't blocking the door. He showed that the door could open. He said he had been there earlier in the day doing the same thing, that he was a customer, that he didn't appreciate being treated in that fashion. And then a Berkeley police officer, arrived on the scene. Now, the Berkeley Police Department now has what's called a station inside McDonald's. It's not really an official Berkeley police station that I know of, although I'm not entirely sure. There's a couple of articles I haven't really closely read, which I just picked up today from the Berkeley Library about this. And I saw it mentioned in the Chronicle, I believe, a couple weeks ago. Apparently McDonald's has put a little Berkeley police insignia on its window to indicate it is giving a complimentary table to police officers to sit at. Now, whether this is because they're trying to use city police to enforce their own security and, you know, harass, enlist public paid police officers who are pretty well paid to do the job of $6 an hour security guards at McDonald's, or whether the police have initiated an effort to use McDonald's as a kind of an outpost to keep an eye on what they consider to be illegal activity in the town, whether that may be real illegal activity like rapes and assaults, or bogus illegal activity like drug war sales of marijuana, like homeless people sitting down on the sidewalk, or clustering like young people on skateboards, or bogus tickets for bicycles, which I consider to be all pretty much an attack on a class of people having little to do with real public health and safety issues. Anyway, McDonald's has provided this table for the cops and has kind of painted a little Berkeley police insignia in the window. And so this Berkeley cop, who I'm not sure if he was sitting at the table, but he was in the building, came out and directed this man. He said he listened to his story briefly, and then he said, told the manager to go inside, and told the man to go out on the sidewalk. And the man said, why should I go out on the sidewalk? That's the whole point. I have the right to be here. I'm a customer. And then the cops strong-armed him out onto the sidewalk. And this upset the man. He became extremely angry, and he said, in essence, fuck you, you pig, to the cop. This is not the most discreet thing to say to a police officer, and particularly whether it's in Berkeley or anywhere else, but it is understandable under the circumstances. He felt humiliated. His rights as a customer and as a basic human being in a public space where he was not engaging in any criminal behavior were being ignored by this cop, who was then physically invading his space, essentially assaulting him and dragging him along to another area as though he were a piece of debris. So he was upset about it, and he spoke out. The police officer then immediately grabbed him, handcuffed him, and told him he was under arrest. It was a completely preposterous response, because saying fuck you to a police officer in Berkeley is not the cause for an arrest. It's free speech action, unless you are actually engaging in assaultive behavior. To consider that this would be challenging to a fight, let's say disturbing the peace, for a police officer in that kind of situation in Berkeley is ridiculous and would never stand up in court, and every Berkeley police officer in town knows it. So the police officer was being vindictive. Well, the response that I had, of course, was to call to people in the area to say, come on over and take a look at what this police officer is up to. And Becky Johnson was luckily there, and she had her video camera with her, and she began taking pictures of this and interviewing people on the streets. And what you're going to hear now is the audio section of that tape that happened in Berkeley last night at University in Chattuck, right outside McDonald's. It had a somewhat happy ending, which I'm not going to give away yet, but well, maybe I will give it away, because it's really something I think you should listen for. The man was released. He was handcuffed. His handcuffs were undone. He was free to go. He was not charged with anything. He was, in essence, vindicated by the crowd of people who listened outside, who spoke up, who demanded that the police act fairly, even though three more officers and two more squad cars arrived to, quote, back up this other cop, the initial police officer who had been inside McDonald's. And that really was quite a victory. And that was good. But of course, the sad thing is that this guy, who's a homeless guy, probably relies on McDonald's for people to go in as one of those places, the few places that's open later at night in Berkeley. And he can go in, pay a dollar, get a cup of coffee, and sit down. I suspect he's now going to be barred from McDonald's, and that to get any kind of satisfaction, he would have to get some access to a lawyer, or he would have to have strong public support. And that kind of action, of course, even though we were able to fight off the police in the sense that we were able to persuade the police through embarrassing them that this was not appropriate on their behalf, we have not been able to resecure this person's rights to get back into a public accommodation from which he is being excluded because he's homeless and because he, in essence, in a fair way, I feel, challenged the decision of the manager. Now, the police officer acted completely inappropriately in my mind. What he should have done, had he been fair about this, he would have told the manager, look, if you want to file a complaint against this guy, I'll arrest him, but that's your affair. Otherwise, it's a civil matter. And it turned out the guy did not want to file a complaint. Now, one of the reasons he didn't want to file a complaint was because we had the cameras turned on him. So let's listen to the soundtrack of this incident last night in Berkeley. I think the fellow's name was Ron. I'm going to hear him as soon as I can get this tape queued up. Of course, there's always the problem of finding the right tape. And this looks like the right tape.
What's your name, sir?
Ron Jacob. I didn't buy, I paid for my fucking mistake. I paid $1.51. Okay, I'm gonna have to smoke a cigarette. Okay. Do you have to yeah, I can't get it. Where is it at?
I'm handcuffed.
Okay, do you have any weapons?
No!
Do you have any needles in your pocket?
No! What's wrong with you? I don't take drugs!
Is this one taking a walk?
What's happening here is that the homeless man is being handcuffed again for standing outside a door at McDonald's and declining to move. Actually, he did move when the officer asked him to move, for essentially saying fuck you to the officer later.
You know, it kind of looked like to me that he got arrested right after he expressed his anger at the officer.
Well, the officer told him to move, even though he wasn't blocking the doorway. Obviously, taking the side of McDonald's management person who didn't like this individual's appearance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like the disturbance was caused by the McDonald's employee. They came out to harass him.
You didn't move before we came to this, it would have been the end. I gave you several opportunities to leave and you didn't leave.
That's not how I remember it, officer. He did move first and then he cursed you after he was out on the sidewalk.
Okay, so you know that guy?
Yeah, that's not what I saw.
The officer is wrong. This man finally did move when the officer directed him to. However, he then told the officer he thought he was a pig, that it was a racist pig.
Yeah.
He had a problem with him. And apparently, the officer didn't like the way the man was doing. Now, you and I may not like the way that an individual speaks to some mistake. They don't arrest him. Apparently the problem, who knows, is that he's
Now, at this point, various people began to gather. Young people with skateboards, a couple that was actually in support of the police. A number of people were kind of concerned about what was going on. And soon thereafter, three other police officers arrived. Actually a much more vivid video than it is an audio. It's really, you can make out what's going on much more clearly and much more vividly, but it does have some points here. Now the assistant manager comes out.
Let him say his side of the story.
I called my cell phone on and walked for the police.
You tried to call the police?
Yeah, but I can't call anymore. I was just talking to him.
You're trying to deal with it?
Yeah, to get up from there.
He cursed at you?
Just a second.
He's telling his side now.
This is bullshit. I was at the city council meeting last night. I was a representative for the homeless. And this is all bullshit. They rejected the vote to get hit or to lay on the streets.
Go ahead.
They rejected about us being able to sit or lay on the streets. And he has every right to be here. It's like, there's no law. There's no trespassing signs around.
Well, he was actually a customer. He bought a drink here.
This is McDonald's. And then he came out here to smoke a cigarette. And then this employee had a real problem with him. And he's falsely stating that he cursed him out. But, you know, I mean, that's my opinion. I didn't hear him say that.
What did he say to you?
It's not against the law. I am one of the representatives for the Chaplains of the Homeless. And this is not bullshit. And I can almost guarantee it. I'll be right up to the next city council meeting.
A young woman speaking, claiming she's representative for the homeless. She speaks very in an outspoken manner.
On the fit remarks, I'm also a detainee. On the fit, this is a man that he cursed.
Is that against the law, cursing?
On the fit, he's filming 415. If you just stand back for a minute.
Anyway, the outcome of this was a positive one. The, as I said, the man who is being held in handcuffs throughout this entire incident is eventually released. He walked along with us for a block or two, invited us out to a cup of coffee, and we talked to some other folks along the avenue on Shattuck where young people were tending to be clustering in numbers I haven't seen for some time, although Telegraph Avenue was deserted.
Officially a representative for the Chaplains of the Homeless. And this is all fucking bullshit.
This man is being treated unjustly by both the management of McDonald's and by police.
Could he just automatically use the slogan?
What? Because you pay a lot of attention to have one of the cops run everything. You're going to be safe and you want to go ahead and pass it. Who's that?
It's
Johnson, he came out to smoke a cigarette.
I came out to smoke in there.
Do you believe in civil rights, ma'am?
I believe
no, I do, but I only have a right to stand outside of a restaurant and pay taxes.
You're
not
to be on the premises.
To support our cause.
Okay,
to make everything safe. Yeah, but how are you unsafe because this man was smoking a cigarette outside of McDonald's? How were you unsafe?
I don't have a right to go.
Why do you automatically believe what the police officers say?
Because he's homeless doesn't mean
he's... We watched the whole incident, and now the police officer is saying something different than what actually happened. Don't you care about justice?
Of course I do.
Hey, Ben,
I
used to work at McDonald's for a year, and basically since he's a customer and he bought food, he's allowed, there's a rule that you can stay on the property for 20 minutes while you're consuming food or cigarettes, so he has a right to be here. As long as he wasn't staying more than a half hour, and if he wasn't harassing customers, he can stay.
No, he was, and he was being harassed by the manager, at least that's what I saw.
What's your phone number?
569-924-924. I know. You guys.
See the picture of the shake?
Actually, I think that's why he's getting arrested, because he exercised his freedom of speech.
And what you're hearing now, of course, is a group of people who become increasingly interested in what's going on. It has to be said that some of them were intimidated by the police and kept urging this woman who talked about being wanting to speak to city council, being part of the ecumenical Berkeley group with the homeless. She said that she had a right to speak, and she said, fuck the police, and she said she felt it was harassment. She stayed, even though her friends were reluctant to stay. And it was that kind of attitude that resulted in this man's being freed.
I just call that guy racist anyway. He doesn't want to proceed with
the case. Well, he's been on his own. So you're free to go.
I'm free to go.
I'll take your stuff up.
What's your name, man?
I'm Becky Johnson.
And at this point, the man was freed to go. And still, of course, he was forced to leave. He actually chose to leave, not to go back to his position at McDonald's. That issue was never really reached because, of course, the issue of higher force was raised.
When you make a mistake, officer, admit it.
Yeah.
Ignore it.
You can get your McDouble Burger, and then you can get your...
And that videotape, actually the audio section of that videotape, was compliments of video journalist Becky Johnson, who hopefully will actually be able to play that on some television show where it can actually be seen more vividly. The audio section, as you can hear, lacks the clarity, and you can't really see the whole scene as you should to get an understanding of what went on. But the reality was that at least a man's arrest was prevented. A homeless person, because the community of people, just ordinary people passing by, some of them young, some of them homeless, some of them not, just asked the police officer just what did he think he was doing. And it is true that the man's rights were not guaranteed. He wasn't able to go back to the peaceful enjoyment of his milkshake in the place outside McDonald's where he was trying to stand without being molested. So it was a defeat there, but it was a partial victory. And I think it's that kind of public activity that we need here in Santa Cruz to stand up for people who are being mistreated, whether it be by overzealous restaurant managers or by police officers backing that up. So I encourage you to keep an eye on things here in Santa Cruz, and when we see that sort of thing happening, just say no. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. That's Peter, Paul, and Mary, When the Ship Comes In. You hear that one every so often on my show, because I keep hoping the ship is going to come in. And for Berkeley, and even a little bit for Oakland, in the last couple of days, the ship has come in. I mentioned the Berkeley Sit on the Sidewalk law, which we went to Berkeley, some of us, to oppose, was defeated. It's actually, again, only a partial defeat, because although we defeat the law, we still have police officers acting as though there were a law, which allows homeless and poor and young people to be treated as second-class citizens, just like we have here in Santa Cruz. But the council itself was pushed back by the citizenry, who came in out in great force to just say no to this anti-homeless law. And we're going to be hearing from the audience. I got a few clips from what was said at the Berkeley City Council meeting on Tuesday night, defeating the sit on the sidewalk, go to jail law. This is a law that made it illegal to sit anywhere on the sidewalk in a commercial area between 8 in the morning and midnight, whether shops were open or not, whether traffic was being blocked or not, whether you were tired or not. Only exceptions were things like an emergency or a permit or a wheelchair. So it was a real draconian measure. Again, it's not a total victory at all, because this follows on the heels of a thing called Operation AvWatch, which I've been talking about up in Berkeley, which is essentially an attempt to drive people away through claiming they can't be there, they can't sit there, they can't hang out there, through massive police intimidation presence and looking for all kinds of reasons and pretexts, looking for the kinds of things which you would find in great numbers in any neighborhood, minor violations if you wanted to go in and look for them. You'd find people jaywalking up on in the richer areas. You'd find people riding bikes the wrong way. You'd find people sitting down in areas. You'd find people with a dog off a leash. All kinds of stuff that if police moved in and tried to start enforcing those kinds of laws in the College Avenue area in Berkeley or on the west side in Santa Cruz, there would be a huge protest from people saying, just what the hell is going on here? And in fact, that's what happened on Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley when this program began June 15th, where there is no sitting ban. And in response, the city council, headed by conservative Shirley Dean, who is currently the mayor, tried to pass a law that made it illegal for people to sit on the sidewalk and failed. And that was the good news. Another piece of good news from Oakland. Here's a story from the San Francisco Examiner in today's edition. Oakland medical pot limit, 1.5 pounds. Unanimous council, get that, city council. Unanimous council votes for state's most permissive rules. This is the city that Jerry Brown was elected in. Essentially, though he doesn't take power until January, last June, in the primary. Unanimously and without discussion, the Oakland City Council has established the state's most permissive medical marijuana guidelines. Henceforth, medical marijuana users in Oakland may hold a stash of 1.5 pounds, equivalent to 30 outdoor flowering plants or 48 indoor plants, without fear of arrest. For the time being. What appears to be the definitive test case for California's medical marijuana law, enacted in 1996 as Proposition 215, is brewing in federal court in San Francisco. Among the defendants is the Cannabis Buyers Cooperative of Oakland, which helped develop the guidelines. At issue is a preliminary injunction in May by U.S. District Judge Charles Breyer ordering 6 Bay Area cannabis clubs to shut down. Breyer said that federal law supersedes Proposition 215. On Wednesday, just hours after the Oakland City Council promulgated its new guidelines, the U.S. Attorney General's office filed a motion asking that U.S. Marshals, be authorized to close down the Oakland Club as well as others in Marin and Mendocino counties. The government also filed motions ordering the clubs to show cause why they should not be held in contempt of the Breyer injunction. A hearing on the motions is scheduled on August 14th. Oakland's guidelines, developed by a committee of police, patients, physicians, and Oakland's legal staff, as well as the Buyers Cooperative, far exceed the limit set by Attorney General Dan Lundgren. As far as Lundgren is concerned, the limit is 2 plants or 1 ounce of marijuana, which by his calculations is equivalent to a 30-day supply. Those guidelines have been in effect since December 1996, and no one, sheriffs, police department, DAs, has had any problem with them, according to Lundgren's spokesman, Matt Ross. As for the Oakland guidelines, quote, we hope that law enforcement will do the right thing when stopping an individual with 1.5 pounds of marijuana, he said. Jeff Jones, executive director of the 1,700-member Cannabis Buyers Cooperative, said the council's passage of the guidelines, vetted by its Public Health and Safety Committee, kept the city on the leading edge of this issue. Jones noted that the Oakland modeled its guidelines after those of an ongoing federal experiment, the Compassionate Investigative New Drug Program. That program rations medical marijuana users to 0.5 pound a month or about 10 cigarettes a day. Just 8 patients are currently participating in the federal program, Jones said. Police don't want to arrest patients who are legitimately using marijuana and are able to provide documentary proof that they are, Jones said. But under the guidelines, somebody possessing marijuana for sale or for personal use that's not medical will be cited and arrested. This again, the San Francisco Examiner, and the key point here is that Oakland has passed the most liberal law about medical marijuana in the state and is backing up its Oakland Cannabis Buyers Club in spite of U.S. attorneys and U.S. Marshals' attempts to close down the Oakland Club as well as those in Marin and Mendocino. So that is definitely good news. Stay with us here on Free Radio Santa Cruz and call in if you want to discuss any of these issues. We are at 423-5361.
Isle, American dream, affluent style. But Robin Leach might be surprised by what I see before my eyes, watching lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on the city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon. just to survive. It's an awful fight. I spend my time collecting cans while you're out working on your tans on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me. You and me. Now 30,000 children died while some politician lied. They bust the starving kid who steals while the fat cats make their sweetheart deals on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me.
Robin Screech here with another thrilling episode of Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless. Today's journey takes us to the streets of your city, where we'll visit the homeless in their native habitats, street corners of makeshift cardboard shelters, sewer grate and doorway bedrooms, soup-lined kitchens lit by blazing oil barrel fireplaces, alleyways of the addicted, the unemployed, the destitute, the insane, eating and sleeping in the most unlikely places. It's all here on Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless.
Now, in the ghetto, there's always room for the ethnic population boom. The melting pot boils past the brim while the people's future's looking grim on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me. You and me. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless. Of the poor and nameless, coming soon.
And that was, of course, Mark Levy, one of my favorite folk singers, Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless. We're now going to skip across the country. Again, we're going to have more on Berkeley soon, but first we're going to kind of skip back a few days to talk to the editor of the largest homeless newspaper in the United States in New York City. His name is Indio Washington. He's been publishing this paper for some time. I thought we'd give you an insight into how things are going on the other side of the world there.
And
just old Indio of the Street News, which if you listen to his recording, when you call his phone number in New York City, which is where this newspaper is based, you'll hear that this is the oldest independently published street paper in America. Not true, of course. The Street Shit Sheet of Santa Cruz came out in 1988. However, we are more sporadically published, and therefore we will yield in this case to you, Indio. How you doing?
Well, from the square, from the air, and it's an honor to be interviewed by you, my brother.
Well, thank you, and it's an honor to receive finally in the mail several issues of Street News, which is not just a newsletter. This motherfucker is a newspaper. I mean, we got pages and pages. I guess it's, 48 pages, something like that? And how many vendors you got selling this thing? What do they sell it for?
We had 150. Now it's down to about 75. And that went down during the last issue in November, from Thanksgiving on. A lot of people went to visit their loved ones, And a lot of people have jobs, or they're on welfare, or social security, or disability. Mm-hmm. And I'm a retired job developer also. So in one way it's bad, in the other way it's good, because we have people back in the mainstream, and they're not living on the streets. So we have a people now that are also formerly homeless that may sell the paper part-time, and they also write articles.
Now, how many issues per, I guess you put 6 or 7?
We, originally, it was 12 a year.
Right.
And now, it's like, so far, we lost so much time from last year. This is our third issue.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, I can catch up. If anything, it'll come to maybe 7 issues. But the main object is 12 issues, and then we want it to go down twice a month, and then once a week, and the long-term goal was daily.
Mm-hmm.
We're not playing games. We're trying to go against the main media.
Mm-hmm.
The people can really get the real deal. What has happened, we are hurting because of vendors. However, the price of the paper went up, and the vendors are making more money. We have a paper, and it tells a lot of the other sides, which are...
It's almost like a magazine, like a newsprint magazine. It's $1.75, says Street News, the soul and spirit of the street, world's oldest active homeless newspaper. And you do cover, you have a lot of letters written in, a lot of... information, interviews from poor people, Street News family. You apparently even you commission articles to be written on subjects around homeless rights, like the latest big issue controversy.
Yeah, well, we've been dealing with homeless rights and human rights for the last 6 months, and that lasts since President Clinton has went to China. Human rights is the big thing in the daily media. Mm-hmm. But we've been preaching human rights and dealing with homelessness for the longest, and that's our goal, to make people aware. We just recently received a call dealing with Crazy Horse Beer, and I was talking about Arizona iced tea. People are not aware that Crazy Horse Beer in Arizona is made by the same company, you see.
The same company as?
As, well, Crazy Horse Beer is derogatory to Native Americans, because Crazy Horse was a warrior and he never drank.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like if they put Jesus beer, Mohammed beer, Kishnis beer,
mm-hmm.
a big uproar would be about.
On the other hand, Clinton condoms might be a big seller.
Oh, no question. Elementary. And so what they're doing is putting out Crazy Horse beer, and then they come out with Arizona iced tea.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still mocking the Native Americans, and they're not giving up. And they're just looking the other way. But
so you're covering a variety of human rights struggles, but let me focus in on one, which those of us here on the West Coast don't hear much about, except occasionally the efforts by Mayor Giuliani to run the homeless out of town. What's happening with if you were to
Giuliani is really getting like a Gestapo. He has a lot of Hitler tactics. He reads the press every morning, which is done by most military people.
Oh, you mean the book The Prince by Machiavelli?
No question. And
mm-hmm.
all dictators will read that. That's part of the requirement when they go to school.
Well, what has he done in the last 2 or 3 years that you think has been particularly important in impacting homeless people?
He's gotten the homeless off the main media, the main streets of New York. He has sent the homeless upstate most of the times to Camp LaGuardia. And Camp LaGuardia will soon be demised and taken over by Reality House. So I don't know where the homeless are going from there. Most of the homeless will go into Bellevue Hospital, and they will put them in sick wards and say they're mentally disturbed. They keep them. He's cleaning up the main areas of New York, so out of sight, out of mind. He's been attacking Street News for years by giving us tickets and confiscating our newspapers.
So your vendors are under attack?
They've been under attack for the last 6 years. That's what has really hurt us. I mean, at one time, we were down to Street News is down to only 8,000 sales per month.
What are they now?
They're up to 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
It was 25, we just took it down. The most important thing is we still give out 10 free papers to homeless individuals, which average between 2 to 3,000.
Explain to us how it works. If I'm a man who's homeless and I come to the your street news bureau, what can I expect? What's your process?
We give you 10 papers,
mm-hmm.
Which is equivalent right now to $17.50.
Uh-huh.
Free. Now, you can sell the papers, eat, get high, or rebuy issues at 50 cents a copy.
And then go sell them again for a dollar.
Sell them for $1.75. Now, the bad thing about this is a lot of vendors will sell the paper for $1 or 60 cents or $1.25. And that hurts, but they're their own boss. They pay 50 cents.
Mm-hmm.
So they can sell it for 20 cents or $1.75 max. Most of the time, people in the subways will just give them $1.
Mm-hmm.
These people will give them $1.75 up to $5.
Mm-hmm.
One time, one of the vendors got $50 in Central Park. So, I mean, it's a configuration of just hustling.
Now, you mentioned that Mayor Giuliani has been packing off homeless people into Bellevue Psych Ward. I thought that this was tried with a woman who was sleeping on a grate about 3 or 4 years ago, and the courts found she had basic civil rights, which allowed her to be there even if her mind was not apparently the most primo shape. At least she...
The catch is imminent danger.
Right. There, in California, we have three tests: grave disability, danger to self, or danger to others. Is that similar in New York?
Well, it's the only one that I'm aware of is imminent danger.
Mm-hmm.
That's up to the authority or the thinking of our finest, New York finest police, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Now, during a lot of big holidays, they will allow the homeless to sleep in the street up until like 5:30 or 6 in the morning, and they have to get up. When I was homeless, I slept in the subways, on the trains, and the ferry boats, things like that.
How long ago was that, India?
Well, that's been now around, I'd say about 6 to 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Has it gotten harder for homeless people since then, you think?
I think so, because